Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You are welcome along to a Wednesday edition of the Huddle Breakdown with the two amigos here today. Our recording schedule about as reliable and predictable as the center back pairing for Celtic this season. Joined by my good friend Alan Morrison, James here on hosting duty today. How you doing this afternoon, Alan? For you, you're it's like a time machine. You're only 4 hours ahead of me this week. It's crazy. We were just talking about it before we went live, this daylight savings nonsense. So how are you getting on?
Yeah, good. And good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are listening and consuming your premium Celtic content.
Yes, and premium priced. You get what you pay for, as they
yes,
say.
Yes, absolutely. You do indeed.
So we're here today to review the blazing display of high quality football from the weekend in the Livingston 2 Celtic 4. I guess I said that backwards. Celtic 4, Livingston 2 result in the cup game. So let's just start. I'm sure you've probably reviewed it already, Alan. Did you have to pin your eyelids open, or did you have to self-medicate while doing it, or how did you get through that?
That's another story, obviously. But now, listen, so not attempting to be contrarian for the sake of it, but it is a feature of doing data analysis of these games that, whereas supporter reaction is usually sort of bipolar, it's either brilliant or it's awful, I tend to usually be in a much larger grey area in the middle as regards most performances. And when you look at this game, you know, and again, just look at some of the basics. I mean, we were just short of 5 XG, right? And they generated just over a half XG. So, I mean, you know, we've talked previously about Champions League games and at the elite level at Champions League. If you let one of the elite teams get to 3, 4, 5 XG, you're probably looking at a 7-8-8-0, right? And in the context of the gap between Celtic and Livingston, that would be equivalent to, you know, a Manchester City or a PSG and a pot four team, right, in the Champions League, at least. So in that respect, you know, in terms of performance indicators, you would say, you know, 30 shots on goal, 25 chances created, over 500 team packing score, 57 touches in the box, you know, over 600 completed passes, all of those things. No saves. Joe Hart didn't have to make a save outside the goals. All of those things, you'd think, okay, that was pretty decent. But of course, it wasn't, in the sense of, you know, it was 2-2 for longer than we cared to bear. And honestly, I was in my head, I was watching the game, and in real time, I was actually thinking of you, sadly, because I was thinking of what are the odds at this point? You know, is it 60-40, 70-30? Yeah. I settled on 70-30 with about 15 minutes to go. I think this is 70-30. I'm not sure I'm really happy about it, because that 30, as they brought on yet another basketball player, I was sort of thinking all it's going to take is one throw, one corner, and you know, we're toast here and there will be no coming back. So the context of the game and the way it panned out wasn't good, and it was more nervous than it absolutely should have been. But if you just look at the raw stats, and that's all you looked at, you'd think, wow, that is one dominant performance. So that's And you know, that's why you have to take into context the actual, obviously the actual game. It's why we watch it with our eyes as well, and it's, don't just rely on the stats. But maybe we were losing our shit a little bit too much. I don't know. What do you think? Am I being too sort of?
I agree with you 100% because that's, you know, from what I've been reading and hearing and some of the other podcasts I listen to, that's kind of why I set you up with that phrasing or framing of the question, is because I agree. I mean, we're in a classic confirmation bias sequencing of the season now, where we're all kind of anchored of the issues of this team. And, you know, I think generally speaking, the mood is tilted negative. So we're all kind of, as we're watching these games, it's like in a visceral.
We're looking for issues.
Yeah, we're just constantly going, yeah, you know, when's this going to implode? And every single time that something doesn't work out, or every missed pass, or, you know. I agree with you. Like, it was, you know, through the analytical lens, they had two great finishes, which, you know, this is a dreadful Livingston side. You know, I went back and looked in preparation for us recording today. And so they're down, you know, as I love how you phrase it, they're in the corner of sadness since 18-19 season, when, you know, kind of the stats bomb data begins, where they're amongst the worst of the worst teams as far as creating chances from open play. And that's populated by those horrible Hamilton teams that were like cockroaches that wouldn't get relegated. And once they finally did, I think they're down in League One now.
They are.
And then that awful, and
they're gonna finish behind the Bears.
Right.
So
your true team. And then also
real team.
Also one of the worst teams in recent history, which they avoided relegation, was the post double St. Johnston team, when they lost Kerr and their other good player, I forget the other guy, they sold the summer preceding that team. And they've had the worst performance from open play. I think their average from open play in XG that season was 0.39. And the only reason, yeah, there was some negative variance for them, but the other reason that they weren't 12th in the table was Dundee was an absolute, you know, defensive sieve. So they gave up a good number of more goals than St. Johnston did, or at least chances in that season. So this is a dreadful Livingston team, and they're, you know, as we talked about kind of heading into the game, they're underperforming a bit. But so, you know, it was that expectation, I think, generally, like people went in with this framing and like we should be blowing these guys out 6-0. And generally speaking, despite all of our issues in defense and, you know, some of the issues in transition and how the midfield's playing with this mix and all of these issues above and beyond that, it still was kind of a 6-0 game in kind of the flow of how things went. And we didn't take all our chances, or chances at a level that, you know, we could have. And they happened to have two, you know, brilliant finishes, which, again, for them this season, that's like a purple unicorn. They just haven't been doing that. So it just happened to occur against us. And, you know, thank goodness it happened in a game when we were, first of all, a cup game, but also a game when, you know, we were, you know, just creating scores and scores of chances.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. I think when I reflect back on the watching experience, a lot of it was I was sat there expecting to see problems in certain parts of the pitch. So I was waiting for the wingers to screw up. I was waiting to get onto, you know, Liam Scales' back for just being that fraction of a second too slow, or not jumping again, not being able to get his body off the ground. And actually, as far as Scales is concerned, these things did happen. But let's point out the bright spark, which I think is, you know, the wing play from both players. You know, we've struggled this season to get one out of two wingers to perform on the day. So to get both, again, caveat it with, it was mainly the first half. It kind of tailed off in the second half. But actually, if you look at it, so I do like an aggregated aggregated metric called Celtic Attacking Threat Score. It adds up. It's a count, really. It's a very simple count of how many shots you had, how many chances you created, how many touches you had in the box. It's just a you add it all together, and that gives you your overall attacking threat score. It's very simple. But in this game, you know, both Kuhn and Maeda had attacking threat scores of 17, which anything, I mean, somebody like Edouard at his best would have been averaging probably a touch under 11. Maybe 10, you might seem breaking double figures as an average. So 17's really good. You know, they both, Maeda had 2.2 expected scoring contribution, Kuhn just over one. Apart from Alistair Johnson, who I want to come to later, they were both like on exactly the same packing score, 177, which is very good, very high. You know, both between them, they had 22 touches in the box of the ball, which is great. It's what you want your wingers to do when they're on the wrong side with the balls on the other side, etc. So all in all, right, and you know, in terms of chances created, I think Kuhn actually created 6 chances on the day. Maeda only 1. We know that's not his strength, but, you know, Kuhn, they weren't great chances that he created, Kuhn, but, you know, 6 chances in a game is incredible. So, you know, let's celebrate the wing play, because it's something that we've majored on all season and worried about. And Kuhn, who, you know, has looked, frankly, a little bit timid, dare I say, a bit scared in the games previously. And the point was made pre-game about his physical recovery from a bad wisdom tooth extraction post, losing weight and all that sort of thing. And again, young man coming to a new club, new city, new country, we can tend to get on these people's back, especially, as you say, because of the negative biases that we're all feeling around that position. And, you know, so I think he pretty much arrived, but in terms of that was a really terrific performance, actually. So the absolute challenge for him is that he's got to be trying to hit that mark, or near it at least, most weeks, right? And that's the challenge for him to do that. And to see Maeda back to his best, where he's taking the ball and just driving it the full back. And now, albeit he was up against a 6'6" basketball player who couldn't run much, you know. So, but, you know, he did it. He got past the guy before he ballooned it into the stands. But, you know, he got his goals. And I think I love Maeda. I love Maeda between the posts. I know they weren't the cleanest of finishes, but I think he can do a lot of damage when he gets in those positions. So let's celebrate the wing play is what I'll say in terms of that one. We can maybe get onto some of the negatives if you want, but I'm going to try and reverse some of the confirmation bias, which, you know, partly to blame for seeding, because the wing play has been atrocious, by at least celebrating that aspect of the game.
Yeah, I think Kuhn's been a victim of the climate in which he's arrived, meaning that, you know, he hasn't been great so far, but I wouldn't say he's been, you know, as bad as kind of the prevailing narrative on him. And, you know, I kind of viewed him as an okay signing when we signed him. I mean, and then when I looked at his history, he seemed, you know, a baseball reference. He's like a replacement level Celtic winger in my mind, meaning that, you know, he's a guy who's going to come into Celtic and perform kind of in line with how most of our wingers historically have performed, which, you know, domestically, that's good enough. Like that's going to be enough to get the job done.
James, we should all realize as well that, you know, those of us that are used to your sort of, you know, fact-based miserabilism, that's actually quite a compliment.
Well, exactly. Exactly. and coming out of last summer, that was my critique again within this framework, is that we were signing a lot of guys that were below replacement level, meaning that, you know, we brought in guys like Kwan and some of these other guys that were like, they're not even up to a level that, you know, like could have been a backup on the 18-19 team, that kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like that, and that. So I think he's going to be fine. He's not as, you know, quixotic as Palma, and, you know, I would view as almost like a selfish player. That's how I view Palma. Like as we've talked about, I call him a compiler. So, you know, I think he's going to be fine. Like, he's got some issues. He's not the most physical guy. He's not going to be a guy who wins a lot of tackles, defending and that kind of thing. But he's fast. He's athletic. You know, he's going to do some good stuff. And I think the fact that there was a health issue, you know, and with transitioning. So I don't worry about him. I don't think he's going to be like a game changer in Europe or anything like that, but I think he'll be fine. And again, for the price level and his age that we bought him at, you know, it's not the aspirational signing I was hoping for, but I also think that people have kind of gotten way over their skis as to how, you know, bad he's going to be supposedly. So I think we'll see more of what we saw on the weekend coming out of him. But the other thing, you know, I got a comment on my buddy Martindale. So, you know, and I'm curious about your feedback on this or how you viewed it watching it a second time is, you know, we joked about how he went flat back six in the last game to try and kind of take away our wing play, which was funny because, you know, we haven't had any wing play normally. This time it seemed like he lined up like a 4-2-3-1 maybe. And
yes.
And man marking. So it was So he pulled a Derek McInnes at Celtic Park with Livingston's talent level. And I mean, if anything, you know, we've talked about how when we have had this kind of performance where we've been dominant relative to, you know, chance creation. And, you know, with the caveat, there's issues. Like, we're not saying there aren't issues or that this was some brilliant performance on the weekend. But it's been when the opposition has really set up in a naively stupid way. And whether it was the Aberdeen performance when we beat them 6-0 and they basically sat back and didn't do anything, like there was no intensity they're defending. Since then, like we've had some of these other performances where the opposition have just been like, what the hell are you doing? I categorize how Livingston set up as like, what the hell were you doing? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of worked to a little extent. I mean, we know that Bernardo, if you put Bernardo under pressure, he's just going to pass the ball backwards, right? So in that sense, it's probably wise to man mark him because essentially you're just forcing him to kind of recycle the ball. You're not going to get a lot of positive variance out of that. And O'Reilly, and you'll probably blanch at the non-analyticalness of
not
this.
At all, Alan,
He looked like a tired player.
Yeah, he looks tired.
He looked fatigued. He looked like he didn't have energy about his play. Having said that, he created 7 chances. That's a poor Matt O'Reilly performance. Just the 7 chances created. Now some of them were from set plays, obviously, from corners and so forth. But still, and you know, again, we come back to this notion that last season, when O'Reilly, as all players do, had a quiet or maybe less effective game, you kind of didn't notice until you tallied it all up at the end. But now you do, because who else is going to do it? That's the problem we've got, especially if Bernardo's being man-marked. And we know that Bernardo's not the most aggressive passer of the ball anyway. So I actually thought it was reasonably effective. Maybe it wasn't by design. Maybe they didn't anticipate that O'Reilly's now 22 matches in a row O'Reilly's played the full 90 minutes, right? So, you know, I think it's not surprising
one wonders why we have a rash of injuries.
So it was probably a wise move in terms of on Bernardo, but they couldn't stop the ball going to the wide players. And actually, I think that's where the centre-backs, to be fair to them, did a decent job as they got the ball to the wide players, especially in that first half, time and time again. And then, you know, there's a lot of havoc to be had there. So I didn't think it was awful what Livingston were trying to do. And I think in the context of the central midfield, it kind of worked. But they left gaps in other places, I think, which meant we had fun out wide, which is what he tried to avoid the first time.
Yeah, that was that's kind of my view is that
playing Nottingham as a right back. I mean, I don't get that bit. If it was just to shoehorn another big lad into the team,
right?
Maybe that was the reason. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I agree with you, like in isolation, about the midfield, but I mean, I don't think there's really a scenario where if they didn't man mark in the midfield, other than maybe O'Reilly, if they just kind of sat back narrow and more zonal and defended space as opposed to going man. I mean, Awata and Bernardo, let them have the ball. I mean, You know what I mean? Like man marking was dragging people out of position, and the space open was just unbelievable.
Well, they've got players. Like if they had Holt and Shinny and Pittman, I think if they had those types of players in the midfield, you could see that almost working. But they didn't. They had young kid Bradley, who's you know, no physicality at all. They had Stephen Kelly, no physicality at all. They had the lad Mackay. So they just didn't have the players to do it. I think that I would say. Yeah, they didn't have the players to do it effectively.
Yeah, yeah. So that was kind of my view. Is that again we've had another opponent that, you know, relatively speaking, and this is my concern that we'll get into as we look forward to St. Johnstone, is I don't see Craig Levein with his history setting up in a similar way. I think we kind of know what we're going to get from him, which is the worrying part to me. On the margin, again, it's all within the margin. Mm. Let's talk about that midfield, because that was, I agree with you. I mean, for the most part, I think the midfield was almost like a draw between the two teams, which is kind of, you know, again, grading on a scale or on a curve, you know, but also probably not that surprising. I mean, I the Awada Bernardo combo is not going to, out dynamic too many sides, even domestically. But you watched the game a second time. So what are your thoughts on how those two play and how this three kind of worked in midfield?
Yeah, as I say, you keep coming back to, if O'Reilly's not at his best, then it starts to stand out. And as I say, last season, there were sufficient other talents that didn't matter so much. And now it does, because the thing with Bernardo is, and again, what you want from a Portuguese Benfica product, under 21 international, playing in Scotland, is you expect them to kind of stand out and dominate games. And he seems to struggle to impose himself on games. What do I mean by that? He doesn't get on the ball enough. And when he does get on the ball enough, he's too safe in possession. And I can't see that changing. That just seems to be the way he plays. It's certainly not worth, for me, for 6 million or whatever it is, the agreed fee, you need a lot more than that creatively. From a creative perspective, are you going to play as a Celtic kind of box to box number eight? It's just insufficient. I mean, he had like how many pack passes? I think it was something like four or three. No, five, sorry, five. He had five, which actually was two more than O'Reilly, which is that's where O'Reilly was really lacking in that game. Iwata actually had 14 pack passes. He kind of grew into the game. Four secondary assisting passes, Iwata, plus an assist. So actually Iwata showed some hitherto not obvious attacking intent signs in that game, which were nice to see. I still think he has little mad moments where he's out of position, and he's at his worst when he loses the ball, because then he just charges around like a bull to try and get it back. So there's some real rough edges there, because I think he's a really composed player when he's in control, but when he's not in control, he completely loses all control and he flies around, and that's a bit of a worry. And as a three, we've not seen that three. I don't think we've seen that three before. So that was new. So and man marking adds a different dynamic to it. So, yeah, I'm not going to make a absolute judgment on that. I think it wasn't perfect. If O'Reilly's playing well, I think the whole team changes, to be honest with you, and looks better. So that would have a bearing on it. So, I think both of them had their moments, more so Iwata, as I say, and especially in the attacking sense. He was surprisingly effective in the final third, which is unlike him. He doesn't get packed a lot, meaning he only get packed four times, which is actually less than the fullbacks, meaning he's very disciplined. And McGregor would be double that at least, because McGregor tends to wander to try and create danger. So we do have that discipline, albeit we conceded two goals, but not 0.6 XG against. I would still, on the whole, I would still take that, because our XG against is going down, by the way. I think that's only fair to say, despite the obvious deficiencies at centre back.
Yeah, I think some of that has to be caveated with how dreadful they've been from open play. You know that them creating kind of their average against us from open play is, you know, again, on a curve is not great. But yeah, I generally agree with you. I think that the, you know, the issue with Awada, and this is why I kind of don't like this mix with him and Bernardo, is he's just not dynamic enough on the ball. And combined with the center back pairing, you know, it's these, as I keep borrowing your sayings, it's the toxic combinations of mixing him with those two center backs. And I think that's why Carter Vickers, a fit Carter Vickers, could be so meaningful with Awada, if that's, you know, kind of the pairing that we end up, if McGregor's injury is longer term here. So it's how Awada fits with those two center backs, and then, you know, with almost a complete dearth of any creativity coming out of that left side. I mean, from the midfield, to your point on Bernardo. So it's, you know, we'll probably get to the point of speculating on over the international break on potential Hatate return and what that might mean. But that's an example where we're just, you know, game to game, Bernardo's almost a zero in that regard. And you know, there's a, like you said, he had that nice pass. I forget which team against inside the box, but you know, kind of connecting the center backs into the final third. It's where I don't, he almost does nothing. I mean, other than recycle, you know, he's not picking up the ball and carrying it, or, you know, making any kind of great pack passes to take out defenders with any kind of reliability.
That's so, right. I mean, it's like, even, you know, people talk when they sort of, and it's now become reminiscing, when people reminisce about Hatate, and their minds, they're thinking about great through balls and great passes. But actually, Hatate's most consistent attribute that he brings to the team is he just carries the ball forward.
Yep.
And he's actually probably the best midfielder we've had, just for that simple, just simply getting the ball further than 10 yards in the opposition half. And that might sound like a simple thing, but no. You know, it is something that we track, and like Bernardo, as James has said, Bernardo doesn't do it. Right? And when he doesn't do it, it just means you're lacking that little bit of progression. Because if you just progress the ball at reasonable speed, 10 yards inside the opposition half, you're forcing the opposition to make a decision about who goes to close down, do they leave their shape and all that. And then, you know, and then somebody else presumably that has then got a bit of freedom. So Hatate's ability just to simply drive forward into space on occasion, I would say is more missed than the occasional glorious through ball that we get.
100% agree. And again, within the context of this midfield three in particular, that's not O'Reilly's game really either. That's not his relative strength. He's probably actually a little bit below, you know, it's probably a weakness on a relative basis for him. And I don't think that's really Awada's strength either. Like, he's not, we're not going to get the kind of charging runs that are less frequent, but still there with McGregor, where, you know, there's a seam and he just blows past the presser and all of a sudden within a, you know, 2 seconds, you're 20 yards up the pitch, and now all of a sudden, you know, the defense is in transition, it's a little more chaotic. Like, that, it's just getting very difficult to catch the, and this again back to my criticism on how Livingston set up, is that, you know, with that kind of situation, you know, a team like Craig Levein St. Johnson's likely to be more narrow, more zonal. Yeah. Who's going to be creating the angles and the movement and getting a bunkered defense disorganized a little bit or in transition with a little bit of chaos? That's where, again, even with how deficient we are in midfield, the way they were set up on the weekend, it kind of made it easier, to your point. I mean, the wings were, it was a free for all. I mean, it was.
Well, so and we did get the wingers running and you know, creating space and creating havoc in the wide areas, and that kind of compensated a little bit. But you know, going forward, that is a real deficit with those three players. And who is going to actually create space simply by ball carrying? I mean, it's not, ball carrying is, it's not like passing in terms of, it's a relatively low volume activity. But as you say, when McGregor does it well, and he suddenly goes past two or three, which he can do, you know, it can really, really, really disrupt the defense.
Yeah, and I guess that's the one thing where the nature of Awada it does. I mean, again, this goes back to confirmation bias. You know, every time Scales or Welsh goes on a rampaging run, you know, you're just waiting for it to go horribly wrong. At least I am. but that is the benefit of Awada being there, which is he just kind of slides in, and he's more likely to be central and in a position to do that. Whereas if McGregor's, you know, all over the place, which he probably should be, and again, that's not me being critical of how he plays or how he's being used. But if you're going to use the center backs in that way, you've got a natural player to kind of swap in and cover, replace that that player making the run. The question is, you know, what's the marginal upside of a Scales or Welsh doing it? And again, this is where I think.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
On the weekend, they were able to do that and then get the ball wide. And then because of the matchups and the way Livingston were playing, that was actually creating some problems for Livingston. My fear is on the weekend coming up that, you know, Scales makes a run and runs into three guys. And, you know, even if he passes it out wide, there's to do what? Like, yeah, they can maybe cross the ball aerially, but into three center backs or five guys right there, as opposed to, you know, more chaos like we saw.
Yeah, sometimes it's actually a game where you've got a lot of the ball, you've got so much possession, and it's in those games that players' weaknesses become apparent.
Right.
Because I do think if we had a game away in Europe to a really tough team and we were defending the 18-yard box, I think you'd see the best of Liam Scales. I really do. Yep. I think that suits his game, defending his box, heading crosses away, being big, being strong, thou shalt not pass. Simple game in a sense. I think he probably is very good at that sort of traditional centre-half play, but ask him to, you know, dictate the tempo of play, ask him to make timely runs that aren't simply just moving the ball and then running into trouble, which he did time and time. I mean, I think four times he actually turned the ball over in bad areas the weekend. You know, these things all become, and just that fraction of a second longer that he takes to move the ball than anybody else, it just becomes exacerbated when you're up against a team that you're dominating and it's 2-2 and everyone's getting a bit tense. It just heightens it. Some of it's confirmation bias, but some of it is because it's what's happening in front of your eyes, right?
Oh, 100%.
And then you come to just the fact that, you know, he's 6'3", and, you know, he's just losing aerial ball after aerial ball because he can't jump. He can't jump. He's actually small. The more he tries to jump, the smaller he gets in relative terms to the opponent. You know, he was 11 wins, 7 losses in aerial challenges. But, and this is something I'm going to look at, which is sort of clean aerial wins. I think it was like 7 out of 18, as in he won the header and Celtic kept possession of the ball. Because the problem with Scales is even if he does win the header, it's often such untidy ball that either it just ricochets to some random, or it goes out for a corner, or it goes out for a throw. And then against a team like Livingston, that's exactly what they're looking for that second phase. It's just untidy. It's not clean. It's not dominant, is what I'm trying to say, right? And that is very much was highlighted.
I think so. That opens up an interesting. We won't get into it too much here, but it opens up a key distinction between data and analysis, because if you just look at raw aerial dual stats, which you know that's like generation 1.0 of data that you know Instat and Yscout have been recording for almost 10 years now. I can't believe it. And then StatsBomb just came out with kind of a next generation version of that uses an ELO model, which is okay. Every duel's not the same. I've mentioned it on here before, but it depends on, you know, the opposition. So if you beat, you know, if you win a header against Greg Taylor, it's not the same as against Carter Vickers. And there's a scoring, like in chess, relative strength of your opponent in the aerial duel. And actually, if you look at that, so on a raw basis, Scales is kind of middle of the pack. If you look at him on like an ELO strength of opposition basis, I think he's fourth in the league. Like, so he actually wins, you know, I'm putting that in air quotes, wins the header in the sense that he's the one that heads the ball over the person that he's battling against, which suggests, oh, well, he's actually a good defender. But this goes back to your next step, which is, okay, like how cleanly is he winning these? And that's how a lot of the stuff's on fine margins because, and this goes back. I suffer the same disease as poor Liam, white man's disease. And you know, joking growing up, you know, whether it's Woody Harrelson and White Man Can't Jump. I played basketball up through high school, and couldn't jump over. As we joke, you can't jump over a telephone book. Right. And I actually had a guy dunk on me once and I was eating his crotch. That's how high he jumped and dunked over me in a summer league game one year, you know, so I can relate to this problem. And, you know, that extra 2, 3, 4 inches on your vertical that you're not getting is that margin between he might be doing a lot right positionally in the box. To your point, like he's really good inside the box when he's, you know, positioning, but he just can't elevate to the point where even with his height, where he's dominant.
You mentioned Taylor. Taylor can spring. He's right. Only a small guy, but he can spring.
He's got
and he
some
wins
hops.
More than his
yep.
fair share. Yeah,
yep.
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Scales, as I say, Scales gets smaller the more he tries to jump.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. So all that. Nightmares. So it's like, I mean, I kind of, I think that ELO thing is great. I love the concept of that, of essentially pairing off. Because an aerial duel is a duel, so it's a 1v1. So if you have each person having a sort of relative, you know, stat attack card or whatever it is, and like, you know, what's your jumping score? Mine's the trumps, like playing top trumps, isn't it?
Right.
You know, I like that. It's simple, but it's meaningful. But what I do is slightly different, is that for every duel, and by duel either I mean it's either a ground duel, so I call that a tackle, or it's an aerial duel, which I call an aerial duel. There's four things that can happen. You either win the duel and the ball then goes to your team. So that's a win-win. You win the duel, but the ball goes to the opposition or it goes out of play. Essentially, it's turned over. You lose the duel, but the ball still goes to one of your own players. Or you lose the duel and the ball goes to the opposition. So it's all, everything falls into one of those four categories. And both Scales, what I'm going to look at is well, let's call them dominant wins. You've won the duel and the ball and you maintain possession. Because I'm going to look at that next week or this week maybe in terms of, because I've got, this is centre-back data, I can go back a long number of years on,
yep,
and just compare. Because I don't think he, even if he is, like to your point, even if he is winning the ball, it's rarely clean and it's rarely in a dominant way. Like Carter Vickers, he's not a big guy particularly, but he just manoeuvres the opponent in such a way that he can win clean possession. And he does it through what I'd call physical intelligence. He knows where to put his body. Whereas when I look at Scales, I look at somebody who's he's awkward. The way he runs is awkward. He doesn't seem to have that physical intelligence of where to position his body. What's the optimal? Where should I be? When should I? When at what precise second should I bump the player such that I then take a step back and I've cleanly won the ball? He doesn't possess that ability.
The dark arts.
It's an ability. It's, it's an ability, though. It's a decision. It's a physical act. Yep. So you've made a decision. It's about timing, and then it's about having the strength and the positional ability and the brain power to then perform that act in such a way that you win clean possession. Carter Vickers has got it. He doesn't, right? I can't put it any other way. Now, in terms of how does that come out in the data, I think it's hidden in that, in some of these win-loss, win-win type metrics. But I think, I suspect, well, the sounds of it, the StatsBomb Elo thing is probably not quite doing it yet, but I would hope that they would get there.
No, and I think the other aspect of this is that that doesn't necessarily mean that somebody's good in the air. And a classic example of that, I think, in recent history is Iyer. I mean, Iyer could actually defend okay in certain ways aerially, but on attacking headers, he was useless. And a lot of times that's not even a duel. So if you're Kyogo, who, because of movement, you're able to split defenders and get a free header, that's not actually an aerial duel. So that doesn't get classified as he beat someone.
No, I wouldn't classify it. Yeah.
Right. So that's not, so that doesn't mean he's bad in the air or good in the air. It means that, damn, this guy can get into space and finish on a cross aerially. So that's a whole separate aspect of all of this to break out from a skill set perspective to analyze. But any other final thoughts then? Any others? Well, you wanted to get back to Alistair Johnston, so let's touch upon.
Yes, I just again, he's. I mean, maybe you might call him a compiler, but just I'll pick out three data points from the last four games, i.e., the four games since he recovered from his facial injury. Right, his packing score, his average packing score, total packing score, that's taking into account passes, receptions, turnovers, recoveries, and running with the ball past the points. Adding all those things together, you net packing score. His average up until he was injured was 93 per game, which is good. His average in the last four games is 177, which is almost double. He's twice had an over 200 packing score game. So 200 packing score is a bit like scoring 50 points at basketball, right? It happens. It's not irregular, but it's something you'd say, or taking five wickets at cricket for those many, many Celtic fans that I know love cricket. It's noteworthy. It's something to be celebrated. He's passed 200 packing score in a single game twice in the last four games. His expected scoring contribution, again, up to the injury, was 0.28. So that's expected goals plus expected assists. 0.28, decent for a fullback. In the last four games, it's been 0.66, so almost more than doubled, actually. And then it's simply just his possessions in the box. Again, before injury, it was 1.5. Last four games, it's been 3, so it's doubled. So, he's just, whether this is a burst of form or what you want to call it, but long may that continue, because that's from the sort of, let's call it the go-to starters that Celtic have got, and we don't have enough of them at the moment. We're going to need the O'Reillys, the Johnstons and the Harts and the Carter Vickers to be at that level for the run-in, to compensate for the fact that the Yangs and the Coons and the Palmers and the Bernardos are going to be a bit like this, So yeah, but I also wanted to, I think that's a good news story in that sense.
Yeah, I think to me Johnston is a good example of a good player, a useful player who's not getting optimized. So I think domestically, obviously he's fine as a right back playing at Celtic, but I think, kind of like what we talked about with Welsh in the past, I think Awada probably fits this criteria as well, which is, I think a right-sided center back in a back three is kind of how he's built to be, the most useful on a team. Because a lot of those attributes that you're talking about, consistently he's good at. He doesn't have the blazing speed. He's got decent speed. He's got a good speed for a right center back. Does he have the level of speed as an attacking fullback for Celtic, where he's gonna at a European level, or you know, even against a higher quality athletic fullback in Scotland, is he gonna blow past them regularly, get to the byline, and whip those crosses? You know, probably not, not consistently. And that's where I think, you know, he's got a lot of value that could be utilized in a different way. But I agree. Like, he's obviously going to have the ebbs and flows with performances like everybody else. And it would be huge if he goes through a period here where he's, you know, kind of on the ball, you know, gets hot, so to speak. He gets, you know, he's playing chess instead of checkers for some reason. And you know, we go through that. Like, athletes go through that. You go through these periods of, you know, and again, to use a baseball analogy, you know, this is why batters go into slumps. All of a sudden, what looked like a cantaloupe coming in, and you could see it, and everything's kind of working in slow motion. Mm. You know, they call it being in the zone across sports. You know, all of a sudden, you can't see shit. Like, it could be the, you know, a pitcher hangs a curveball that's just kind of fluttering in there, and you don't see it, and you just swing right through it. Whereas, you know, if you're in the zone, you know, that's something you hit 450 feet. So, you know, hopefully, to your point, we're getting some of these guys that are getting into these areas where they're more in the zone and able to see steps in slow motion. But that's, again, I think, you know, caution prevails, because we've had these false dawns, and you know, given the relative matchup against Livy, I think I'm trying to remain cautiously optimistic. But that's, I think we'll segue here as we look towards the weekend with St. Johnstone, because I think they're going to present a different challenge than Livingston. So to his credit, you know, one of the big issues that they were having is that they were conceding, you know, pretty much the highest amount of XG in the league prior to Levine's arrival. And he's chopped that down. Like, they're much more organized. They're still not creating much. They're, you know, probably around the same as far as chance creation. And I'm not implying that they're a good team. They're performing at a level that still puts them about where they should be in the table. But, you know, on a single day, if a team's well organized and, you know, gets a decent performance from their keeper, and or our finishing isn't great, which, you know, hasn't been a lot of the season. You know, they're probably, you know, they're defending in that zone of teams that are under Levine that are better teams, like a Hibs or Hearts or an Aberdeen. Like, that's kind of where he's got them defending at. And that also speaks to how much those other teams are underperforming, by the way. But so, you know, as we look towards this game, that's kind of where I do get anxiety, is that we're probably going to face a team that's better organized, more disciplined, and with a more difficult philosophy for us, given our relative weaknesses. So how much do you love Craig Levein and watching St. Johnstone?
Oh, God. So, I mean, yeah, the data I've got is kind of, it's aggregated. So it's post, I don't have pre Levein coming in and post Levein coming in, right? So, you know, and then this is a team that's won, what, two of the last 12 games, 1-0 at Ross County and 2-0 at Aberdeen, which is not as great as it sounds, to be honest. So, you know, if you look at their stats for the season, you would say that they're probably just a slightly better than Livingston, but not a lot in terms of attacking capability. Ross County, and they're probably just not, and Ross County are probably just worse than them defensively. And again, St. Johnstone are probably on a par with Livingston. You know, I think the second highest in terms of XG against. I think the second most saves that the goalkeeper has to make by any team. You know, so their goalkeeper on average has to make 3.59 saves a game. There's only Ross County, which is over four, has a higher value. They tend to have very low average XG per shot for, and you know, pretty high XG against shots on their goal. They've got the second worst XG difference in the league and the second worst post shot XG difference in the league. They've got the lowest expected goals for in the league, so their attack is just really, really bad. So listen, that, so really, I agree that their game plan will be more simple and coherent and defensive than Livingston's, who still, you know, I think Martindale was wanting to get as far up off the pitch where he could get in as many basketball players into Celtic's goal mouth as he possibly could. And therefore, you know, it wasn't an all-out defensive, you know, performance from Livingston. But I think this will be. So, you know, but in terms of just sheer ability based on performance, I don't think they're any better a football team than Livingston, to be honest with you. And in terms of, you know, capability, in terms of personnel, I mean, they're still relying on Nicky Clark in terms of he's come back in the last few games as one of their strikers. You know, they've still got, you know, the likes of, you know, Liam Gordon, McGowan in defence. It's still sort of same old in that respect. Considine still playing, yep, unbelievably. You know, they've got a bit of physicality and presence in midfield. I think the lad Phillips, who gets booked most games, he's got something about him. But you know, they really struggle to create. They really do. I mean, there's very, in fact, I think probably they have less goals in their games than any other team in the league. So it's going to be dour. They got a 0-0 before. So, and if we all remember that one, because it was, you know, we remember that one for Liam Scales, who had too much of the ball that he exposed himself a little bit. Yep. He was just on the ball too much. So here's a question for you. So just a little bit of chatter I'm getting is that Carter Vickers is fit and may well play at the weekend. Oh, so good. Who partners Welsh or Scales?
Oh, I mean, yeah, I mean,
should I chop off your right hand or your left hand?
Yeah, so I guess that comes down to, you know, preference versus, I think Rodgers will stick with Scales. I think he's kind of anchored with that. I think the mix would be better with Welsh. And I think Welsh is two-footed enough that he'd be fine on the left. But, you know, I worry because, you know, we've been talking about this. So Carter Vickers being fit enough to play is not necessarily Carter Vickers at 100%. And yeah, some of the comments about that Rodgers made about squeezing the game and our center backs not being high enough, we'll be fine against St. Johnson most likely in that regard. It's more so, you know, if, as we progress into the post-split, well, the derby prior to that, and then the post-split games where some teams will have a little more. And if, you know, if Carter Vickers continues kind of carry something where he's, you know, maybe 90% or 95%, where he's just that half step slower, you know, that would be, you know, kind of a concern for me. But yeah, I'd probably lean towards Welsh, but I don't think that's going to, you know, I don't think that's going to happen. And, you know, it's a lean. Like, I don't think it's a clear and obvious decision between the two. The one thing I will say on St. Johnston, so, because I did kind of break it up between pre-Levine, that they were horrific before Levine came in. And I think that skews some of the season data. Right. So the one part, so they are bad on set pieces. So again, I'm not, you know, implying that Craig Levine's like the greatest manager or coach in the history of the world, but so that's emblematic of, you know, an issue for them. Because a team like them, I mean, that should be a focus, and you would think, you know, a team in a situation that's not doing great on set pieces, that's problematic. But that's not a strength of ours anyway. So that's kind of a relative matchup that it's like, you know, tilts our way, but it's not something that makes me, you know, feel warm and fuzzy. Where they have actually improved under Levine is defending an open play. So they've basically moved from like horrific to mid-table. So that their actual like XG concession is better than Motherwell. It's better than Aberdeen. It's better than, geez, I just had it up. Let me, So, yeah. So they are better than, all of those teams. And the ones you would expect, like Dundee and Ross County. So, again, if we go back to this, you know, Motherwell is, I think, a decent comp for them. Only skewed a little bit, meaning that Motherwell's got a little bit more in attack. They're better on set pieces. I think St. Johnstone's probably on margin similar defensively, or maybe he's a little bit better in open play. And their keeper's been decent. That's the other thing that gets me perpetually.
Mitov has been very good. Yeah.
Yeah. So that makes me nervous on a relative basis because, you know, Kelly's a bomb scare. And, you know, so I don't have anxiety over the sense that, you know, they're going to beat us 2-0 or they're 2-1. It is. It's the 0-0 Craig Levein special that keeps me up at night. And that's what keeps me nervous.
He's over his time, he's flipped between a back three, back four, 4-5-1, 3-4-1-2, 4-2-3-1 the last two games. So he's kind of horses for courses kind of manager. So he's going to set up not necessarily in a predictable way. It's going to be in a way that he feels can best nullify. When they got the 0-0 at Celtic Park, now he wasn't the manager, but they set up in a 4-4, basically two banks of four, and then somebody trying to link with the big lad up front who had a good game that day, Jayesemi, I think it was Jayesemi, I can't remember his name. Sorry, apologies for not pronouncing it properly. I wouldn't be surprised if they did something similar, really. Had a big focal point, somebody trying to get close, and then two solid banks of four would be the way I think they'll set up. So I take your point. He's definitely improved them. Probably enough that they're not going to get relegated, which just probably means he's done his job, right? So fair play. And you know, all things being equal, it should be a similar outcome to the Livingston game in terms of the actual stats of the game in terms of Celtic's dominance. But you know, the nervousness again is that, okay, so the wingers were great for 45 to 55 minutes. You know, will one of them play well again? Will both of them be rubbish? Will Ida played as if he was Norwich's fourth choice striker at the weekend rather than how he had been just really well. If he performs like that again, you know, are we going to score, etc., etc.? So my worries about all those things, I guess, more than whether Levein plays three at the back or four.
Agreed. Yeah. I think it, you know, same level, just presents a different challenge that I think likely matches up to be more problematic for us given our relative strengths and weaknesses. I do think it'll be fascinating. Probably one of the more interesting questions will be at the striker position. And if we do end up going with one striker, is it Ida or is it Kyogo? And my concern on a relative basis would be that we flip-flop in a bass-ackwards way. Meaning that the way, and again, you can't know how an opposition team is going to set up beforehand, so you can't predict the future. Given the way Livingston set up in the past, I'm not being critical, but it just happened that the way that Livingston set up to play probably would have benefited Kyogo from the start over Ida, given the movement and the man marking and the space that was available. Whereas, you know, I think Levine's more likely to set up in these two banks and narrow and fairly deep, where probably that's going to suit Ida, I would think.
And
so I think it'll be interesting to see. Yeah. So, you know, this goes back to this issue of on form and, you know, recency bias, which is obviously Kyogo looked much better. And I am of the opinion, like, you know, somehow we got to figure out a way to play Kyogo the majority of games because, you know, I do think he's still our best attacking player. And, you know, so how do you do that? And this goes back to you try to squeeze him in the 10 role. And so that, you know, we're right back to all of these conversations that we've been having recently. So I think that will be interesting, meaning that, because in my mind, like the idea, why Awada and Bernardo against, you know, that. So if we see the same midfield as the weekend and Kyogo up top, that's when I'll start to get nervous. Yes. That'll be the official nervous bell getting rung. So let's hope not. But any final thoughts as we wrap it up here?
I think we're thought out.
Okay, good. especially after this daylight saving stuff, I emptied out what little is left in my head. Okay, well, everyone, thank you for joining us. I don't know if we flirted with the idea of coming back later this week. Probably not at this point, since we've talked about the St. Johnston game, but we'll be back next week to review that game. Subscribe, like, leave us a review if you'd like on the various platforms. That always helps us out. Enda will be back again at some point, hopefully in the near future. He'll be producing this, so hopefully we'll get this out today as he gets around to it. But thanks for carving out the time in your busy schedule there, Alan, and everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.